The tour content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoked Jew podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading is from Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, Book 10, Chapter 33, but first, a brief intro. So there is a concept that I refer to as Stoic invulnerability or Stoic invincibility, which I've talked about on a few episodes before this. I'll link them in the show notes. And basically, the idea boils down to what Marcus Aurelius wrote in the Meditations, Book 4, Chapter 8, which is, "What does not make a man worse than he was, neither makes his life worse than it was, nor hurts him without or within." In other words, according to Stoicism, the essence of what you are is your will, your reason, your will, your soul, and therefore it's possible for someone to hurt your body, but your body is not you. It's also possible for someone to hurt your emotions, but your emotions are not you. Really, the only thing that is you is the choosing, is your bechira, your free choice, the part of you that chooses. And therefore, the only way that someone can make you worse is if they corrupt your choosing faculty, and the only one who can do that is you. Okay, so that's the basic concept. Again, listen to those other episodes for elaboration. But what I found today is a lengthier discourse on how exactly this works. And, you know, I find there is definitely value in the short almost proverbs. Again, we can't quite call them proverbs, but the short formulations of Stoic ideas. But there's a different benefit in the lengthier expositions because you get to see more into the mind of the thinker and, you know, have more to work with here. So this is kind of a long excerpt, and I will read it and interrupt with my own comments here. Okay, so this is again in Meditations, Book 10, Chapter 33. "In any given material circumstance, what can be done or..." "In any given material circumstance, what can be done or said to soundest effect? Whatever that is, it is in your power to do it or say it. And make no pretense of obstacles in the way. You will never cease moaning until you experience the same pleasure in making an appropriately human response to any circumstance you meet or face as the hedonist does in his indulgence, a response that is in keeping with man's constitution, because you should regard as enjoyment any action you can take in accord with your own nature, and you can do that anywhere." Okay, pause for a second. So I think there are two ideas here. The first idea is basically that you should not complain about quote-unquote obstacles in the way. Now, I'm like 99% sure that he is using that as a reference to an earlier chapter, which I'm very fond of quoting, Marcus Aurelius' Meditations, Book 5, Chapter 20, which I'll read here. He says, "In one respect, man is something with the closest affinity to us, in that it is our duty to do good to men and tolerate them. But insofar as some are obstacles to my proper work, man joins the category of things indifferent to me, no less than the sun, the wind, a wild animal. These can impede some activity, yes, but they form no impediments to my impulse or my disposition, because here there is conditional commitment and the power of adaptation." Now, this is the key part. "The mind adapts and turns round any obstacle to action to serve its objective. A hindrance to a given work is turned to its furtherance. An obstacle in a given path becomes an advance." The formulation of this that I think is pithier is the one on the Stoic medallion, which I'll include the link to the episode about. "The obstacle is the way. The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way." So according to that reasoning, the idea that whatever is in your path should be used to further your objective, you know, turn the obstacle into the path. So therefore, you shouldn't complain about any obstacle, because any obstacle is just something that you're going to use for your own advancement. And so that's why he says don't complain about these things. But further, he has the second idea here, which is that the response, I'm going to read this part again. "You will never cease moaning until you experience the same pleasure in making an appropriately human response to any circumstance you meet or face as the hedonist does in his indulgence, a response that is in keeping with man's constitution." So the hedonist leaps with joy at any opportunity for pleasure. So too, the Stoic leaps at joy for anything that is in his path that gives him an opportunity to practice living as a human being. So even obstacles, so certainly if it's not an obstacle, certainly if you encounter something that easily helps you to further your objectives, but But even if it's an obstacle, then you should leap at the opportunity to make a decision about how to convert that into something that is in line with your values and your objectives. Rabbi Moskowitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, always used to say that that the Chacham, that the wise man of Mishlei, will delight in problems because each problem is like a little game that you can figure out, what is the best decision I can make here. So even if it impedes you, then the Chacham is never truly impeded because in every circumstance he can apply his Chachma to the situation, his wisdom to the situation, and figure out a strategy for using this to the greatest effect. Okay, let's go on in Book 10, Chapter 33. He says, "Now the roller, I assume this is like a wheel. Now the roller does not have the gift of following its own movement wherever it will, nor does water or fire or anything else subject to a nature or life without reason. There are many barriers or impediments in their way, but mind and reason have the power, by their nature and at their will, to move through every obstacle." He says, one more paragraph here. "Keeping clear in your view this easy facility of reason to carry through all things, like fire rising, a stone falling, a roller on a slope, stop looking for anything more. Any remaining hindrances either come from the corpse which is our body, or, without the judgment and consent of our own reason itself, have no power at all to break or harm." Okay, so here, this reminds me, well, let me state the idea first. The idea is that the inert things in the world, like fire or a rolling wheel or stone, they don't have the ability to control their own motion. But you, as a human with will and judgment, do have that ability. You have the ability to control how you respond to situations. So I immediately associated to one of my favorite hidden gems in the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah here. So, the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah in chapters 2, 3, and 4 in Hilchos Yesodia Torah, in the laws of the foundations of Torah, gives his little overview, Aristotelian overview of physics and metaphysics. And a lot of people tend to skip over these chapters because they feel that, Aristotelian physics is outdated now, and there's nothing of value here. But there are some real gems that should be appreciated. So one of them is at the very end of chapter 3. So he's talking about the four basic elemental bodies. Back in the ancient times, then they viewed they said they believed that there were four elements, earth, fire, air, and water, and everything was made up of these things. So I'm not going to go into details about those, but the Rambam says like this: Arba'a gufos ha'elu, einam bale nefesh. These four bodies, these four elemental entities, I guess we'll call them. I don't really even know exactly what he's talking about, but you'll be able to follow the point anyway. Enam bale nefesh, they do not possess souls. The enam yodim, and they do not know. V'lo makirin, and they do not recognize. They don't discern. Ela kegufim mesim, they are like inanimate bodies. Literally, gufim mesim, they are like dead bodies. They are like corpses. V'yesh l'chol echad ve'echad mehem minhag she'eino yoda'o v'lo masigo ve'eino yachol l'shenoso. And each one of them has a minhag, has a pattern of behavior that it neither knows nor apprehends, nor is it able to change. Okay, so those are the four elemental bodies. Okay, now if you take that, oh, and sorry, by the way, he does talk about the what this minhag is. They believe that fire goes up, and water and earth, fire and air go up, water and earth go down. That's what he means by their motion. So, like, for example, in chapter 4, Halacha Bet, he says, Derech ha'esh v'haruach lihios mahalchim mahalcham mimata mitabur ha'aretz lamala klapi harakia. So fire and wind, their trajectory is to go from below, from the belly of the earth, upwards to the sky, towards the sky. The way of water and earth is to go down from the sky into the middle, because the middle of the firmament is the depth that there's nothing is lower than. Okay, fine. Now he emphasizes again, their motion is not with their knowledge, nor is it with their desire. Rather, it is a tendency that is fixed in them and a nature that is inherent in them. Okay, so that's what he says about the elements. Okay, however, if you contrast that to Hilchos Teshuva, to the laws of Teshuva, chapter 5, Halacha Aleph, when he's describing free will, this is what he says. He says, Rishus kol adam nesuna lo. Choice is given to every human being. Im ratza lahatos atmo lederech tova v'lios tzadik, harishus biado. If he wants to incline himself to the good path and to be righteous, then he has the ability to do so. Im ratza lahatos atmo lederech ra'a v'lios rasha, harishus biado. And if he wants to incline himself to the bad path and to be a rasha, to be evil, harishus biado, then the ability is in his hands. Hu shekasu b'Torah, this is what is written in the Torah. Hin ha'adam haya ke'echad, mimenu l'da'as tov v'ra. This is the famous reading of the Rambam of this pasuk based on Onkelos. Behold, so the way we would normally translate this pasuk is, behold, man has become like one of us, ke'echad mimenu l'da'as tov v'ra, to know good and bad. But the Rambam puts the comma in a different place, or the colon in a different place. Hein klomar, hein minze shel adam haya echad ba'olam. Behold, or sorry, in other words, behold, this species of man is like one in the world, meaning is unique in the world. The ein lo min sheni dome lo b'zeh ha'inyan, and he has no second species that is similar to him in this regard. Shehehu me'atzmo b'da'ato u'v'machshavto, that man by himself with his mind and his thoughts, yodea hatov v'hara, knows the good and the bad, v'oseh kol ma shehu chafetz, and does whatever he wants. Ve'ein lo mishi akiv al yado milasos hatov o hara, and nothing can prevent him from doing the good or the bad. And since that's the case, then God had to stop him from reaching out to eat from the tree of life to live forever. Okay. Then he goes on and he says, Al yavor b'machshavtecha davar zesh omrim tipshei ha'umos v'rov golmei b'nei Yisrael. Don't let this thought enter into your mind that is said by the majority of the fools of the nations and the underdeveloped Jews. Shakadosh Baruch Hu gozer al ha'adam mitchilas b'riaso lios tzadik o'rasha, that God decrees upon a man from the beginning of his creation to be righteous or wicked. Ein ha'davar kein, that's not true. Ela kol adam va'adam ro'i lios tzadik k'moshe rabbeinu o'rasha k'yaravim. Rather, each and every person is fit to be a tzaddik, a righteous person like Moshe Rabbeinu, or a rasha, an evil person, ki Yeravam, like Yeravam. O Chacham, O Sachal, O Rahman, O Achzari, O Kilai, O Shua, V'chein ko shar kol deos. Or wise, or foolish, or merciful, or cruel, or stingy, or spendthrifty, and same thing with all the other character traits. Okay, one more paragraph here. V'ein lo mishiach pehuv lo gozer alav lo mishi moshcha le'echa mishnei hadrachim. And there is no one who forces him, nor decrees upon him, nor draws him to each one, to any of the two paths. Ela hu me'atmo umidato note le'ezei der shiirte. Rather, he, by himself, with his mind, inclines himself to whichever path he wants. Hu shi Yirmiyahu Omer, this is what Yirmiyahu said in Eicha 3:38, mi pi elyon lo seite hara'os v'atov. From the mouth of the one on high, from God, do not come forth the evils and the good. Klomar, meaning to say, Ein habore gozer al ha'adam lo lios tov lo lios ra, that God does not decree upon a person to be good or bad. Okay, so did you catch the similarity? Okay, similarity is in the way that the Rambam describes the elements, the inanimate elements and of nature, and the way he describes man, that when it comes to the elements, he says each one has only one minhag, one derech, one path, that it doesn't know and doesn't choose. What did he say again? He says eno yodao v'lo masigo v'eno yachol l'shanoso. He doesn't that it doesn't know it, doesn't recognize it, and cannot change it. Okay. And when he was talking about the motion of fire and earth and air and wind, he emphasized that it is their motion is not through their mind nor through their choice. Ela minhag shenikba behem v'teva shenitma behem. It is a tendency that is fixed in them and a nature that is inherent in them. But with man, first of all, man doesn't have a minhag. He has two drachim. He has two paths. The path of the tzaddik and the path of the rasha, the path of the good and the path of the bad, and his motion is me'atzmo umidato uv machshavto, with from himself and from his mind and from his thoughts, you know, and he can do kol mashu chafetz. He can do whatever he wants. It stems from the exercise of will, and there's nothing that decrees anything upon him. And unlike the other things in nature, where their good comes from God, is decreed by God, for man is the source of his own good and bad, in the sense that he can choose to be good or to be bad. So I thought that was just another amazing example where Marcus Aurelius is really writing the same idea that. You know, if you are a rock and you're rolling downhill, you can't change your own path. And you can't, you know, if something blocks you, then it's hindering you. It's really hindering you. It's stopping your motion, your natural rock motion. But with a human being, your motion is your reason, and your reason is entirely in your control. And so nothing can actually hinder what is the real you. And I want to complement this with the final paragraph here, where he elaborates even more. He says, actually, I'm going to lead into it with the last sentence. Any remaining hindrances either come from the corpse, which is our body, right, which is not actually our us, right, or without the judgment and consent of our own reason itself, have no power to break at all or to harm. Otherwise, anyone meeting such hindrance would immediately become bad himself. With all other organisms, any harm occurring to any of them makes them worse in themselves. But in our case, to put it so, a person actually becomes better and more praiseworthy for the right use of the circumstances he meets. Generally, remember that nothing harms the citizen of nature other than what harms the city, and nothing harms the city other than what harms the law. None of our so-called misfortunes harms the law. So what is not harmful to the law does not harm either city or citizen. Okay, that last part, I don't quite understand what he means, but let me just focus on this other thing, where he says that with any other organism or object, then anything that occurs to them makes them worse in themselves. So take, for example, a flower or a dog, right? So those are creatures, creations, organisms, and things can happen to them. So if you have a flower and you cut off its leaves, right? So then that is a harm that you are doing to the flower that it can't control. You're making it operate worse than it was designed to operate, right? Or whatever, a tree. Let's say you cut off the leaves of a tree, right? So the tree cannot get energy from the sun anymore, okay? And you're impairing its photosynthesis, which is going to impair its ability to perpetuate its species, which is its function, okay? Or take a dog, right? If you injure a dog and prevent it from behaving in accordance with its dog nature, you are actually harming it. But with a human being, if you, let's say, break a person's leg, like Epictetus's master did to him, the leg is not him. The leg is his body. And what you're doing is you are creating a challenge or an obstacle, but that's where the first part of Marcus Aurelius' advice comes into play, which is that the obstacle is the way. And now Epictetus can take that broken leg and use it to learn lessons. He could use it to reflect on the distorted views of his master who acted in anger. He could, you know, in our framework, use it as yisurin, to afflictions, to do tshuva. He could use it as an opportunity to thank Hashem for the opportunities that he's being given through his other faculties that do work. He can, you know, if his career depended on his I'll give an example of this. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this before. My mentor in Azraeli in graduate school, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Feuerman, Olav Shalom. I don't know what career he had before, but he was he was in his I think he might have been even in his 40s, maybe 30s or 40s. I don't know the exact time of this, and he was loading Esrogim into the back of his car, and I think a drunk driver swerved and then crushed his legs. And as a result of this, then he was in the hospital for months and had to go through many surgeries. And, he had already been in financial difficulties and was, you know, kind of like spiraling in terms of certain types of failure. And he made the decision to go into education, and he went into education, became a teacher, then became a teacher of teachers, and influenced, tons of lives. So, you know, so this injury that could have been a setback, he made that obstacle into the way, and he chose to do a career change, to make a career change, and everyone ended up benefiting from that. So that's what I mean by, or that's what Marcus Aurelius means by the fact that since you are not your body, then if you were your body, then someone harming your body would be harming your very essence. But since you are not your body, you are your will, you are your mind, you are your judgment, then something that happens to your body provides an opportunity for your mind to now make a new decision. And as long as you don't let that thing that happened to you make you into a worse person, as long as you make the best decision given those circumstances and use it to better yourselves, then you are invulnerable. In fact, you're better than invulnerable. You become a better person from what happens to you. And that's really the challenge set forth by Stoicism and by Judaism, is to take what happens to you and to use it to become better. And this is, you know, we've tied this into Tillim before. I actually have to go in a little while, but when David Melch says, I can never remember this phrase. Hold on. Yeah, when David HaMelech in Tehillim 118:6 says, Ad Hashem li lo ira ma yaseh li adam. Hashem is with me, I shall not fear. What can man do to me? My understanding of that is obviously man can injure you, right? It's not like he's talking about this as though he's invulnerable, right? That because God is with me, then no one can harm me. And I think there are people who will think of that as God is giving me his protection. Nothing can happen to me physically. I don't think that's what he means. David HaMelech is not saying that. What he means is that because Hashem is with him, because, you know, as Unklos would say, Memra Hashem b'sa'adei, that the word of Hashem, the wisdom of Hashem is his support, that he's living a life in line with God's will and wisdom to the extent possible, so then anything that happens to him is not truly harming him, in the sense that we've described here. So he is invulnerable. So that is, you know, maybe for some of you it's a review. I don't know. I found benefit in reading Marcus Aurelius's elaboration on this idea, and so I thought I'd share it. All right, that is it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeWeiss. Alternatively, if you'd like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweiss Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is at Matt-Schneeweiss, and my Zelle and PayPal are MattSchneeweiss@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you'd like to sponsor a day's or a week's worth of content, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at RabbiSchneeweiss@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening. Thank you to my readers for reading, and thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.